Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show,
where we talk about things that matter,
practice the art of coming more alive,
and reflect on just how strange and wonderful life can be.
We're glad you're here.
Just be with me. Just be with me. Just be with me.
I like those words. Just be with me.
I missed the, the end of the countdown.
That's it. That's all there was. I don't know what you're waiting for.
No, I don't either. I always forget that you don't do the intro video thing until after.
After.
You like a little pregame and then an intro video.
That's right.
And then all of your magic that you create for us. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
I'm so excited that Reverend Jen is in the house.
I haven't met
Jen yet.
This
excited.
Is a place. Aww. I can't wait for us to go on the Kate and Colby
you
Show.
You know what, Tori? I like it.
Tori, you made it to the Kate and Colby Show.
It's very sweet.
Tori's been hanging out with me in the altar on Wednesdays.
okay, but Ben just made me LOL.
What's the cackle?
The altar, which is Colby's show on Wednesdays, it needs to be a different day than this show. I'm going to go into Martin Overload.
Yeah, that's
and then
that's
so good. I love it.
Let's turn the mic down just a little bit because we're
are
clipping.
We loud?
Yeah, bring it down to like 7. Are we loud? You're adorable.
That's not what you
only
mean.
One of us is loud.
Oh, me and my cackle.
I love your cackle.
My loud Christensen cackle is what they call it.
Tonight on the show, we've got, as Kate mentioned, the Reverend Jen Butler, who's going to help us see this intimate, integral connection between faith and politics.
I'm very excited.
Hold on now. Hold on now. I thought we weren't supposed to get political with our religions. So that's what we're here tonight for. And to hang out with all of you.
Let's
so glad you're here. Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show.
Us again.
We made it. We made it past the cold open.
This is the intro after the intro and, you know, how we do here.
It's like when I preach a sermon. I love a good intro.
Hi, everybody.
Give me 20 minutes just to set the intro.
Hi, Joel. Oh, Susan just finished baking cookies. Susan's my favorite
baker.
Hi,
Susan.
She's always making us good stuff. You just made cookies. What kind of cookies? Melanie says that she loves Wednesdays with King Colby and their guests. Our guests are the best, aren't they?
I'm telling you.
Every time.
We provide the peeps with some quality experience.
Every time.
Sure. You could go watch another...
Netflix.
Yeah. I was going to pick a specific show, but then I didn't want to alienate or judge people
River?
Who might really like the show that I just arbitrarily picked.
Okay, I almost started watching Virgin River the other night. I was this close. I really like the woman who plays the lead character.
I don't know what Virgin River is.
I don't really either. So I'm asking the people, did I make the correct decision and like, nah, or do y'all like it? Why did my voice just change when I moved like this?
It changed.
Everything sounds different now. Do I hear you still?
Did you lose your sound?
Oh, no.
Did the audio? Do you hear yourself?
Nope.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Going back. It just keeps shifting in and out. We'll see how tonight goes, my friends. We'll see how tonight goes. Shall we do some viewer check-in?
Yeah. Speaking of how tonight goes, this...
Oh, Susan loves Virgin River. See? I guess I made the wrong decision.
This afternoon for my show, The Altar, I...
Oh, Tori, you were just killing me over here. I literally stopped watching Mandalorian to get on here today. Well, we're so glad you're here.
Hearts. Also, we need to keep watching Mandalorian.
I know. I really, really, really love it, and I really want to watch it, but it makes me sleepy. Not in that this is boring, I don't want to watch it. Just, you know how, like, aesthetics and sound can just be kind of... Like, you love a good slow song, but it can also make you drowsy.
That's
how I feel about Mandalorian.
Yeah, I was going to tell a story about this afternoon's live stream show, but it's fine. It's not all that interesting, especially because some people who are watching here already knew about it. But I accidentally killed the stream 2 minutes into the show.
Oh, yeah, I saw your post about that.
And it wasn't easy to get back
on.
But the people followed me back. Anyway, yeah, let's get to the viewer check-in. Bass guitar.
Where is it?
Oh,
I can't find anything.
That's fair.
Goodness gracious. Colby switches everything around so much. So just when I get like trained on all of the technology, then he switches it all and I can't do it anymore. It's and I have to relearn it. I'm not saying
No.
Viewer check-in.
Do it.
There we go. Hi, babies. We did.
Yeah, and we're playing the air guitar.
Do you need something?
It's the best part of the show.
If it's a question about something that you can have or do, the answer is yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Tonight's question is in the arena of political feels. What's the first political issue that you remember caring about?
This question. You're so good at this.
Oh, thanks, baby.
I can never think of this question.
Think back to yourself. Years ago, as far back as you can remember, to the earliest point at which you remember a particular political issue that you got interested in or passionate about. Do you remember what it was? Do you even remember the context why?
Oops, I pointed the wrong one.
That was a great pose, though. Which pose?
Could be I don't know what I poses. Like that. It made me laugh.
So let us know in the comment section. What's the first political issue you remember caring about? Apartheid. Oh, yeah.
Oh, Joel says the start
of the Iraq War.
Y'all were quick to answer as you remember. It sticks in our brains, doesn't it? Did you already say yours?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay. I like
nuclear proliferation. Yeah.
LGBTQ rights,
since I am a quote lesbian. That makes sense.
I'm really trying to remember. I mean, that it comes up fast, but then I realized, wait, does it? I can't remember the first thing that I really got my attention, got me on the hook.
Yeah.
I was not raised to care about politics except for to be told that you couldn't be Christian and Democrat at the same time.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point, right? Is like,
it's all my parents taught me about politics.
It's like we were
Republican.
Told we weren't really given any sort of political framework.
Nope.
We weren't really given any sort of tools to talk about it, think about it. We were just sort of told politics don't matter and also abortion is evil. Politics don't matter and also, you know, being gay is an abomination. So there's like these social issues that got sort of spoon-fed into the religious setup that weren't framed necessarily as political issues. They were framed as like pseudo spiritual, puritanical, moral issues. So even though now I can think back and be like, yeah, I remember being instructed about the evils of abortion, I don't remember it being framed as a political issue, even though it is.
No, we were at the same time told not to be political in church, not to care about politics.
Yeah.
It was a contradiction for sure, because politics is about people and policies and how we live. I mean, I can't wait to talk to Reverend Jen about this, but
yeah.
It all matters. I love this from Susan, that the college I was going to wouldn't let both senatorial candidates speak on the campus. That was the first time I helped get a petition signed.
Oh, nice.
And the administration allowed them to speak. That's pretty
fun.
Cool. So your petition actually worked and you got what you wanted. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
People are saying hi to each other. That was 1978, so I don't even remember the issue, so I love it.
Yeah, I think the first one I cared about is probably similar to who said that, Joel Smith, start of the Iraq War. I believe that is probably the first time at least one that I remember caring about.
Yeah, and Shane hopped on to say something about that too.
Deciding not to support. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that, I remember being in college during the 2000 election. So it was Bush v. Gore, maybe? And the whole college was a Baptist college. So everybody was just assumed to be pro-Bush. And yet there was one guy who lived in our hall that was like the loud and proud Democrat. Tad Hildebrandt. Shout out to you, Tad. Appreciate the way you bucked the system. And you were you.
I don't remember this story. Have you told this before?
I don't think so.
That's cool.
And what's even more, okay, here, this is even more interesting. As I think about Tad, I think I remember Tad being kind of cowboyish. So like a cowboy Christian who was Democrat.
Yeah, baby.
In a Baptist college. Anyway, yeah.
It all belongs. We are all contradictions, complicated people. All right. Oh, I never said mine. I feel like I had an experience of all of the sudden caring about everything at once. Like, it was just this big, oh my God. And it just felt like this, an explosion of issues that suddenly, it was actually very overwhelming. Because again, we were taught not to really care about any of that.
And yeah.
It all became very important to me very fast.
Yeah. And like you opened the valve for yeah. just went just
fire hose
on suddenly. Yeah.
That's my experience. I know this doesn't really answer the question, but that's because
it's a response to the question.
Yeah. That was my experience.
There's no answers to the question.
Anyway, what are we going to do next?
Anyway, now we're going to say, if you would like to support the Kate and Colby Show. Before we go any further, let me just make this quick plug. We love to provide this podcast and this live show free of charge.
The music goes,
it's my favorite sound effect. Yeah, we provide this free of charge because we love doing the work and we love introducing people to incredible guests like Reverend Jen Butler. Yay. And a couple months ago, we decided, what if we opened up the opportunity for people to support the show? Mm-hmm. Would they? Because that's pretty vulnerable. Right? I mean, it's...
But y'all came through.
And so thank you to those of you who have become monthly baristas, which is to say you are buying us coffees on a regular basis every month. Thank you so much. And thank you to those of you who have just from time to time said, hey, here's a coffee. It's $5. Here's 10 coffees. That's $50. Thank you so much. Like, it helps cover the hosting fees. It helps pay for the graphical scenes. It helps provide, you know, equipment that we use in the studio here. And it sort of energetically keeps us going. Like, okay, there's value here. People are here for it. So you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby if that is something you'd like to do to support the show tonight.
Love it.
Shall we discuss? All right, Kate.
All right, husband, partner in all things. This. So I came into...
Good point.
Thank you. Yeah. It's easier when it's straight below.
Just straight down, you have to pick a side.
That's why I love the buy me a coffee thing, because I'm always like, excitedly, things are off to the side or up. Okay, so I came into your office. Was that just this morning, actually?
Yeah.
And I was like kind of freaking out. Well, I've been freaking out about this for a while, but I had my moment of like hitting a wall because we are collectively as a society in this incredible liminal space, this transition period. Yes, we're still in a pandemic, of course, there's that. It's not even over yet. But we also have been transitioning for 16, 17 months, depending upon where you are in the world and when things really first started hitting the fan. But we've basically for 16, 17 long months been experiencing all of these different liminal spaces and transitions that have been all over the place. And right now we're in a really big one. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks today that, oh my God, we can't do this in a culture that is so pain avoidant and grief averse. Like we can't do this. We can't go through this because what we do is we just shift to the next thing and shift to the next thing and shift to the next thing. And we never deal with anything in our society. And I just started to have this panic about people are going back to work and people are going back to social lives and people are going back to all of these things and they have no resources to process that stuff emotionally. And as a leader in many ways, like of our home life and our church and online spaces and even like our writing work, I'm like, how do we do what the world isn't doing and be responsible, emotionally responsible? I don't know, just like leaders, emotionally responsible leaders who hold space for this huge transition. We were all collectively thrown into tragedy and trauma and high levels of stress, right? And then we kept adjusting and adjusting rapidly and rapidly changing our adjusting and our responses. And what have we done to support people in that? We've barely even done anything to support people financially, physically, all the other ways, but emotionally, dear God. And now people are just being jerked into this next phase. That's how it feels to me. It's like it's jerking you out of this trauma space. And it's not dissimilar to when someone close to you dies and you go through that grief process, how fast we do that, how we rush people through that. You get like maybe a week off of work. 3 days.
Here's a couple days with the family.
Here's a funeral.
Here's a reception.
Your like primary partner in life just died suddenly, and people are just, in our society, just forced to go back to work. And I feel like collectively that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Like that on a macro level.
Yeah.
And all I'm saying is it's got me freaked out and asking, I think, really good questions eventually.
Yeah.
Think about what we can do.
Yeah.
What was your response to me bringing that to you? How do you feel about where we're at?
Well, I love that you are often a critic of our society when you see significant letdowns in the stories that we tell and the ways that we handle sort of these big moments. So you have a pulse on that. And so that to me felt like another way of you using that prophetic voice to say, yeah, we can't just, or we can, because we do, like it happens, but we ought not. It would behoove us to, as a culture, take our time transitioning out of this thing. And obviously there's different layers and levels of it. And there's people that have, like, for economic reasons, really needed things to quote unquote open back up and get back into a pre-COVID life. So you have those where, okay, we get it. It makes sense. And I was even talking to a buddy a couple of weeks ago where he was reflecting on, it was like a few days before California was going to say, okay, you don't have to wear masks because you're vaccinated. And he was like, it's just going to be really weird to go from everybody in masks to everybody in no mask. And my response was, it's true, but how else would you do it? Like, at some point there is going to be the shift from I'm wearing a mask and so are you to now we're not. And it's going to just feel, in part, abrupt, but there isn't necessarily a more gradual way to do some of these things. It's just like, today you wear it, tomorrow you don't. And so I was thinking, when you're talking about this need to, or this impulse to help shepherd our community into this, I'm like, how can we maybe normalize that some of it will feel abrupt and there's not a whole lot you can do about it? Like, it's just going to feel abrupt. And then there are other things that maybe they don't have to be as abrupt.
Yep.
Maybe they don't have to be as abrupt. Maybe it would be baby steps. Like, when we were young kids, there was no such thing as TK. Is that what they call it now? Like, the transition. Like, we've realized that even kids going into that, like, 4 or 5 year range, going into kindergarten, like, it's been good for some kids to, like, have a sort of gradual transition. So anyway, I think as your instinct is correct that our culture doesn't handle transitions well. Yeah.
I would argue that some of those super abrupt things, actually, the answer isn't just it has to be abrupt. I would argue we could do some transitional things and slow those things down. But also, you're right, like, where we can't, then okay, we do something else. Like, I was thinking about going back into the workplace, how I wish companies right now were ahead of time communicating to people, when you come back to work, we're going to do extra breaks, and that all companies would just add extra breaks to people's days because they need it. Change dress codes. Everybody can come in their jammies because you've been in your jammies for the last 16 months. Just all these different things that in the workplace provide a space to sit and do yoga and not find it weird or disruptive if someone just stops and starts doing yoga in the middle of their day. But these are all things that in our culture sound radical.
Right.
They sound inappropriate and radical. They shouldn't be.
They
shouldn't be. Emotional wellness should be top priority. And it would help everything else. You see it. You see it in companies that.
Oh, yeah. You want trickle down economics. Like, that's trickle down emotionomics. Care for the soul. Sure. And it has residual.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we decided that as.
You
in
like that.
Every area.
Sort of
no, I didn't.
Nope, really didn't.
Did you like that?
You handled it really well.
So we decided that in our lives and everything that we have control of, that we are going to do as much as we can to not just fall in line with the hurry, 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 get over it already culture is what I would call it.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that. We're going to do things as a family to go slower, to, you know, our family was having family show night every single night of the week, eating dinner in the living room together, having just slow, amazing game days. And we're not going to take those away. We're going to still randomly throw off work days.
Yeah, we went to SeaWorld for 5 hours yesterday morning.
Yep, and you're going to do game day tomorrow with Jamie. And we're just going to find ways to still move slower.
It's not easy.
We're not going to fill our calendar up the way we used to.
No.
I've been real strict about that with our family. Yeah. And then that's just our family. And then with work life, we've been asking, what can we do at Sojo? We are going to provide more spaces and breaks and pauses. We came up with ideas to provide stations at our church instead of just seats where people can go and do, you know, stress work with stress balls, kinetic things. You came up with an amazing idea. Is it okay to just tell it ahead of time? There's only a few Sojo people on here. He came up with a really cool idea to express emotions. We will pull it off. Okay. It's cool. Anyway, but spaces for people to express and to process.
And to process.
And to have space and to not just jerk us back into, this is the way we used to do it, so we're doing it now. Go, go, go. We're not doing that. Yeah. We're not doing that. We're going to push up against that part of our society. Okay. That's what we want to discuss.
Yeah.
How y'all feel? Oh, hi, Stephanie. Rumor has it that one of your future guests wrote a whole book on the theology of suffering, grief, and lament, and they have it on good authority. They would love to talk about all of what you're saying right now, Kate. I can't wait.
I wonder who that future guest is.
That future guest. Can't wait, can't wait.
Yeah, that would be great.
Oh, James, that's lovely. I'm very, very, very happy that you feel that way. Benjamin Cornelius is just pointing out that you said behoof.
Thank you. I don't feel like behoof gets enough airtime in our verbal lexicon. I don't know what the point of that two words back to back was.
Thanks, Susan.
Gift and a guide. That's what we'll put on your tombstone. A gift and a guide.
Oh, we wish you were too, Tori.
Not that I want your tombstone anytime soon.
Oh, Shane said 18 months. See, I can't even keep track of the
months. Oh, good gravy. Yeah, it was 16 months 2 months ago. Yeah, we've been saying that for 2 months.
Have we? I do that all the time. Like, I start marking a time frame and then just say that same one forever. I do that with my kids' ages, and that one's sad.
Kids' ages are hard.
Because that's wishful thinking.
I don't understand.
Yeah, but for me, it's like, I don't want them to get bigger. All right. Yeah. Are you ready for the main event?
We're, yeah.
What are we doing next?
Yeah, yeah. No, if you're ready.
Sorry, I thought you had a plan.
I mean, I always have a plan. I just don't always execute the plan.
Are we ready?
Like, I would hit a little transition, like transition one or two, just to clear out.
Doesn't matter which one?
Nope.
Isn't it so cute how he needs that? He just needed that to happen so he can close the door to the let's discuss so that we can do our next segment.
Feels good.
Isn't that cute?
I think the people likes it.
Okay. Now can we get?
Yeah, let's get to our guest. Bring
him on. Set,
bring him on. Yeah, don't do the guest bumper, not the intro, the bumper. Bumper, then intro. Well, hello, Reverend Jen.
Hey, y'all. This is great to be here.
Welcome to the Kate and Colby Show. We are thrilled to have you. And I think this is late for you, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I almost wore my pajamas. I am in Washington, D.C. area.
You are blessed soul.
All right. Well,
thank you. It's not that late, though.
Okay.
Hey, baby, really quick. I'm so sorry. I'm so happy that you're here, Reverend Jen, but I cannot hear her.
Like, you cannot
just
hear her.
Really, not like it's broken. It's just really, really faint. Okay. So,
oh, no.
I can tell what she's saying, but just barely. Which just doesn't make for a great conversation.
Oh, interesting.
That makes sense.
I feel like...
Am I bumped all the way up?
You're bumped all the way up.
Okay.
Jen, give us a little audio
testing,
check.
Yeah. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing,
now
1, 2, 3. Is it better?
Wild. Now it's so loud.
Now it's really loud.
Nothing. It's just on our end. I think this cable, which was a fit last time, is dying. So note to self, buy a new extension cable. buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby if you would like to buy a new audio cable. Anyway.
Sorry, Jen. Okay, now welcome to the Kate and Colby Show.
Thanks for staying up late and joining us. We haven't really had a chance to meet, you and I prior to the tech rehearsal tonight, and you and Kate for the first time now. And so I would love to get to know you a little bit and invite you to share with our viewers watching now, what you call our view crew, and then our podcast listeners later. What up, pod fam? Just share with us a little bit about who is Jen Butler. Like, if I was to ask Jen's best friend to say, who's Jen? What does she do in the world? How might your best friend answer that question?
Oh my gosh, that's a big question. It would depend on the friend. So I love working for justice, and I am deeply committed to my faith. I'm a bit adventurous. I was in the Peace Corps in a Mayan village in Belize. So I love to travel. I now am a dog lover. I recently got a dog for the first time in my life. And oh my gosh. So I spend a lot of time in the woods.
So this is like a new phenomenon for you?
It's a new thing. You know, my brothers had dogs. I always liked dogs. But to actually like manage a dog, and I have a high octane dog. So I don't have a cute labradoodle, which is what I wanted. My son convinced me to get this rescue dog that has really big ears and she's really goofy looking. And she is a hunter and a successful hunter, not a hunter wannabe, but a successful hunter. Yeah. And so she's constantly catching things and I have to get them away from her.
We know what that's like. Ours is too. What kind? A mix of some things?
I think she is a feist. I mean, she's a rescue from Alabama. Okay. And there's this thing called the feist. And the word feisty comes from feist. And it's an old American dog, part terrier, part hound.
Okay.
She's super fast and super feisty. A real, gosh. Yeah, I got my hands full. She can jump fences. So I'm constantly like climbing fences, ripping my pants, making a fool out of myself. But it's loads of fun. And I'm meeting lots of great people. Most of them not too mad at me for my crazy dog.
Your kind of dog.
That's a feist.
Does that look like your dog at all? Can she see it?
I think she can see it. Yeah.
I can't see.
No, she can't see it.
Oh. It should hit share screen.
There's a little button that should swap between the program screen and your screen. So if you hit that button, then you should be able to see the program screen.
All right. Well,
that's all right.
It's technologically slow.
That is a very cute dog.
But anyway, so big ears. Yeah,
I've just never heard of a feist. That's cool.
They're so cute. So cute.
All right. So back to you, back to your story. Peace Corps.
Back to me.
Yeah. Ordained. Passion for justice. Turns out you like managing dogs.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I've always been an organizer at heart. When I was a kid, I started a school in my neighborhood when I was 6 years old.
No, maybe I was seven.
And I taught the younger kids how to read before they went to school. We had these little like play cubes and I would arrange the room and we would sit there for hours. I loved it.
I adore that.
Apparently their teachers were not very happy about that because they didn't know what to do with them once they got to school. So I'm kind of like a born organizer. I did their job.
These kids are ready to go.
That's so cute.
But yeah, that's a bit about me. I lived in New York City for a while and loved that for about 10 years and did international activism around the United Nations and human rights work and multi-faith work. And yeah, it's been good so far. I have a 17-year-old son.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Why did you become a reverend? What's the story there?
You know, when I was I was always a reverend, honestly, like, you know, organizing. And then I would like hold nativity services, especially for my family. I would make my brothers play baby Jesus, come back down in the manger when they like got uppity about it. You know, from an early age, I was drawn to Jesus. And this is part of my story, right? Like, I didn't hear about this Jesus as much in church. But when I would read the gospel for myself, I would see Jesus standing up for the disadvantaged and for the marginalized. And I remember studying scripture one day for myself and realizing, wow, Jesus, here he's announcing who he is. He says, I've come to bring good news to the poor and freedom to the oppressed. And I was like, wow, this really speaks to my heart because as a young kid, so I guess some of my friends would say about me that I've always been a kind of serious person, a little bit full of angst. And I was worried about racism that I saw in my community and in my family. And I was worried about the threat of nuclear Armageddon. I heard one of your listeners talk about that, the nuclear freeze. And so I was coming of age in the 80s on the eve of, or right at the heart of the arms race in the Cold War, right? And there were all of these nuclear Armageddon films coming out. And I was like, wow, talk about sin. Talk about collective sin. We have this, we've developed the capacity to destroy the planet. Wow. You know, and so I would lie awake at night praying to Jesus about what are we going to do about this, you know? And God, do you exist? You know, and I was going to church, but I was like, how do I know you exist and you can really do something about this? And
what was your religious tradition? I guess another truth is
serious. I was Methodist. Okay. I grew up Methodist in a big steeple Methodist church on Peachtree Street, 8,000 members, went to church three times a week, part of the sports program. Yeah, my Southern accent is coming back as I talk to you.
I'm so excited about it.
About my childhood. And you're going to get Southern accent.
It's just a little bit.
Just a tiny little bit.
It's cute.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So that was me. So I went, you know, on a long journey, I think, to try to figure out how to talk about the kinds of things you're talking about on the show. Like, I was sitting here thinking, what if we'd had the internet when I was growing up and I could attend your community, right? Because where I was on my side of Atlanta, we were not talking about social justice. Yeah. Like, I literally did not get those words until very late in life. You know, we would talk about mission, but mission was about getting people to think and believe the way we believe.
Yep.
Yep. It wasn't, you know, one time I was doing a Bible study with some women once I started working for the Presbyterian Church, and we were talking about women's rights globally. And I decided to start with scripture, and we went over this Jesus mission statement, I've come to bring good news to the poor and freedom to the oppressed. And I said, you know, this really is what our faith is about. And this is really good news to the world's woman. And this woman in there said, you know, well, good news. When I hear good news, I think about like Bible thumpers, people, you know, trying to push the Bible onto people around the world. I was like, if you are a poor woman, you know, one of the women we're talking about in Kenya or in South Africa, what does good news look like to you?
Yeah.
And so we did this whole brainstorm around that. We had to kind of deconstruct the way we had been taught to understand the good news. The good news isn't making people think the way we do. It's showing God's love in action by changing the world, by changing policies, by helping people and meeting their needs.
Wow. Did you have any outside inspiration? Like, it sounds like you have a ton of internal movement, like a God voice that you're very connected to, a quiet whisper in your soul. But did you have, like, for lack of a better term, heroes that you looked up to, heroes of the faith who were doing this kind of work? Or
yeah, you know, watching? Too early on. I know. Yeah. You know, it was hard. I was really isolated. And so when I finally found that community, it was a really beautiful thing. But when I was growing up, there was a documentary, a docudrama starring, remember Little House on the Prairie? This might have been before your time. Melissa Gilbert, right? Starred in that. Yeah. We all loved her. So Melissa Gilbert starred, as she got older, she starred in this docudrama about the nuns that were murdered in El Salvador doing justice work. It's funny because in my Peace Corps group, most of the folks weren't that religious, but we had all seen that documentary. And it was what inspired, you know, this documentary about Catholic sisters doing social justice in El Salvador, getting murdered by death squads just for helping people get water and helping people get educated, you know?
Basic needs.
And so I was like, I didn't want to get murdered, but I wanted to put my faith in action in that way, right? And so that's what inspired me to go into the Peace Corps, actually. So those were some of my heroes, was Catholic sisters. And honestly, I, growing up in the South, I had not even met a Catholic.
I bet. I bet.
And I was taught in my evangelical churches, like, Catholics are not Christians.
Right. That's right.
Right. Now I work very closely, and I tease my Catholic colleague. We have a Catholic program director at Faith and Public Life. I tease him all the time about how he's not a real Christian. Mm-hmm. And he punches back at me.
I bet.
We have a good time with that.
All right. You mentioned Faith in Public Life. That's the first time that's come up here now. So,
what is that?
It sounds to me like this is sort of one of the culminations of your lifelong reverendness, as you've sort of always been sort of in that, right? And then your that instinct, that intuition that you have for justice and paying attention to the world around you, is that, was it the collision of those two things in your life that birthed this organization?
It was, yeah. So Faith in Public Life is a 50,000 leader full network of religious leaders and communities wanting to work for social justice, wanting to put their faith in action in the world. And we're slowly building state chapters. So we're in Georgia, Florida, Ohio, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We're working around the country, but we're building deeper and deeper networks, trying to go deep in every state, because what has happened in recent decades is really the Christian right, Christian conservatism, has hijacked our faith. You know, yep. They've come to represent the voice of Christianity, and they've been so bigoted and unjust in excluding LGBTQ people and, you know, deprecating Muslims and other faiths. And so our goal has really been to reclaim our faith for justice, to get the word out, to help mobilize people to change policies, but also to really put forward the true values of our faith traditions, yeah. which are about love and inclusion.
Yes. Yes. How do you organize that? How do you, how do you even, I mean, I know that's a lot, but like, how do you organize people toward that goal?
Yeah.
What are some of the things you do?
So we, for one thing, we do media trainings, because a lot of times clergy get called on to speak. You know, what do you think about LGBTQ inclusion? You know, what do you think about religious freedom? You know, what do you think about immigration? You know, and so we help clergy both connect to the media so they can get their voices out, lay leaders as well. Yeah. And we also help train them, because there are a lot of tricks to that trade, right? You all are really good at that and probably natural at that. But when you've got like a 30-second interview on CNN or something, you've got to know how to stay on message, right?
No kidding.
So we help prepare people for that. We also help organize them. We're now we've built a program in the what's called the Black Belt of Georgia, which is do y'all know about the Black Belt?
I was just gonna say, I've never heard of that.
So it's like, it sounds like karate, right?
Black belt is where
the swirl.
I'm gonna be kind of sad if it's not.
That's right. You're gonna be sad. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So the Black Belt was this belt of Georgia that was really good soil, and that's where cotton was grown. So to this day, it's where a really dense Black population is, because that's where slavery was the most dense and intense. So we have been organizing in that area. It's cities like Augusta, Georgia, all through that mid area of Georgia. And we've been organizing with congregations there around COVID, around getting out the vote and protecting voting access and access to the ballot, because there are real sort of shenanigans going on in that state.
Yeah. Good for you.
So we've been working with that, and then connecting folks in that area of the state to white folks in Atlanta and North Georgia, so that we can work in solidarity with one another. So we're advocating for legislation. We're helping people get registered to vote. We're helping people have their votes protected when people are trying to shut down voting locations and the like. And so we're doing that kind of work in every state we can get into.
Do people come to you, like, if they are in distress with something, like, they've actually experienced having their voting rights messed with and they come to you, or are you just out there looking for, like, do people know to come to you for help with these things?
Yeah. They now know to come to us because we've built so many relationships.
I bet.
And so this last cycle, for example, there was a town south of Atlanta where COVID hit hard. You might've heard about it in the news, where like there was a funeral and COVID kind of took off in that community.
Yeah.
And so we had to really help with that. And then that kind of tied into voting rights, because there were some efforts there to prevent people from the ballot box. So we sent people in to be poll watchers and to stand in solidarity with that community.
Wow.
Yeah. What does that look like? What do you do? How do you protect voting rights?
Yeah. Good question. So it really helps to have observers, right? Because, you know, bad deeds can't be done, you know, when the light is put on them.
Mm-hmm.
In one area, Cuthbert, Georgia, there is a church elder named Mary Kearney, And she's tried a number of times, gotten elected to public office in that area, but they've managed to take her election away, like decertify her election. They've done that to her over the years, but she has stayed at it. She is now like in her 70s. She stayed at it. And so she was the woman who discovered in 2018, she was looking at the local paper and they had printed that they were going to shut down some voting locations in Cuthbert. And this was the year that Stacey Abrams was running for governor, right? So she is the one who sounded the alarm and worked that up kind of like the chain all the way to like ACLU and some of the groups that were doing election defense work. And so we worked with her in that community. It's a very rural community. Nobody has internet access or very few people. And so the way you have to kind of go at it is like door to door and through churches because everybody goes to church. So we worked with her to organize voter turnout and to help people feel secure because they were changing all of the polling locations, which made it hard for people to get to them and hard to find them.
Wow.
That stuff's so cool.
I love humans.
I love humans too.
I love that. She's 70. She's still at it. She just keeps going.
Jen, a couple months ago,
phenomenal.
Kate and I had we did a podcast episode around there was an article that I don't know if you're familiar with John Piper. I would imagine that you are somewhat familiar with that name. Okay.
I am.
I didn't know if you're Methodist. Roots inoculated you from such individuals, but but prior to the election last November, you know, he wrote this article that was kind of like just saying to Christians, like this Trump leadership administration is not reflective.
Don't
of
vote for Trump.
Jesus. Oh. And I remember reading that and I had this sigh of relief. Like finally this tradition that I came out of, this sort of evangelical Baptist tradition, has someone who is saying that, okay, this thing that has become so wrapped up with Christian conservatism, this Trumpism, this thing is not actually reflective of Jesus. I remember when Trump got elected and the evangelical turnout was just overwhelmingly in favor, it was like a whiplash for me. Like, hold on a second. This feels like a 180 from everything that I'd ever been taught about what it means to be a Christian and what it means to sort of be a good person in the world and like what kind of world we want. It felt like this whiplash. So then John Piper comes out and I'm like, oh, thank you, finally. Even though I have nothing else good to say about John Piper, I at least for that article was like, wow, I actually am grateful for it. And then Kay had a very different response. And so we had a podcast where we talked about that. And we don't necessarily need to dig back into that, but that's one of my way of leading into my next question, which was, you said earlier that part of your mission, part of your goal is to kind of, I don't know, reclaim or take back this, like, what the gospel is, because it kind of feels like it's slipped out of the grasp of the most truest version of the Jesus story is. It's kind of become something entirely different. Was there a moment for you, like, when do you recall in your own story feeling that sense of, whoa, what I thought it meant to be, what I've been told, what I believe it means to be a Christian doesn't any longer seem to be reflective of what the popular idea of Christianity is? Do you remember, was there a moment, was there an issue, was there a particular time in your life where you're like, the average Christian on the street shares nothing with me other than name? That's weird.
There was. So I was actually in seminary when this happened to me. So that was quite a bummer, right? Because I became disillusioned with the faith that I was going to provide leadership in. And so that was a scary moment. I was about to give up everything, right? And it was over LGBTQ issues and rights, and it was over sexism in the church. And so when I was in seminary, I had an experience of dating violence. Actually, somebody I broke up with stalked me and started threatening me. And the campus couldn't deal with that very well. And I was also encountering some friends from, you know, earlier stages of life from college who thought it was wrong for me to pursue ordination.
Wow.
You know, and so the more I looked into that and I looked at the history of the church and I looked at how our holy texts have been like misused. And at some point I kind of asked myself, are they redeemable? Is scripture even redeemable? Because there is really ugly stuff in the Bible, right? There are these texts of terror. And so I went through a dark night of the soul for a couple of years. And I was really trying to decide what to do about that. And then I was in an internship at the Presbyterian Church at the UN. And I found out that the Christian right was starting to challenge women's rights at the United Nations. There have been all these global conferences like Advancing Women and, you know, Challenging Violence Against Women. And one of we had planned an event across from the UN, and some Muslim women came to us. And it was at the time, nobody knew about it as much. It wasn't as much in the papers, but the Taliban was starting to do its thing and Muslim women were really being oppressed. And so they asked if we could help them find some space to do an event. We provided them our space. And it was a cool space. It was this altar. It was this chapel that had this big granite altar. It was immovable. And I was like, what the heck are we going to do in this awkward space? You know, it was like a chapel across from the UN. I was like, this kind of awkward Muslim women coming in. And it was an interfaith chapel. But anyway, we turned that altar into a panel table for these women. So it's like four Muslim women. They're presenting to these women from all over the world. It's packed, standing room only. Suddenly they're mid-presentation, commotion at the door. I look over, there's this huge delegation dressed in robes. It's a Saudi Arabian delegation, and they are coming in the room to intimidate these women. The women stop speaking. You know, they look scared. That whole room stood on its feet and started applauding the women. It had two effects. The women gained courage, and the delegation was blocked. They couldn't get in the door because of the bodies of the women standing there. And for me, that was a turning point, because I was like, if these women can reclaim their faith, then I sure as hell can too. Oof. I should not be running away. I should stand my ground and reclaim my faith. And that is when I decided to be ordained. Because I was like, I am going to stand here at the UN and I am going to reclaim my faith as what it was meant to be, liberation for women. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm going to claim those holy texts. I was working with women internationally on the global HIV/AIDS pandemic, and they were using Bible studies to erase the stigma of AIDS. They were empowering women through that kind of leadership to claim their power and challenge their pastors. So that's what brought me back. Don't let anybody steal your faith.
Just
from
a
you.
Pile of tears no, and yeah, goosebumps. Right. That's all I have. Okay, Reverend Jen.
The power of watching someone else.
I shall go for it.
Seek to redeem their faith.
Yeah.
And this is why I wrote this book, too. Because who stole my Bible? Christian nationalists stole my Bible, right?
Yeah.
But really, scripture is a handbook for resisting tyrants. If we think about the book of Exodus, right? In that first chapter, it's all women who resist Pharaoh in that first chapter.
Come on.
I did not even freaking hear about these women when I was growing up. It is all women who resist Pharaoh in chapter one. You don't even hear about God until chapter two. All you hear about are these women. It is like a Stacey Abrams coalition of black women teaming up with white women and changing the planet and challenging this genocidal Pharaoh, right? So it's Shipra and Puah, who I did not hear about growing up. It's Miriam, and it is, we don't even hear her name, but some people call her Bityas. It's Pharaoh's daughter. Mm-hmm. So it's actually cross-race, cross-class, international, multi-religious coalition that first challenges Pharaoh, and then God walks in, and God's like, I hear those cries. I'm going to throw down with these women.
That'll preach. I don't know if you know that. That'll preach.
God, so as that's what I write about in this badass book. Women. Yeah, that'll preach.
Yeah, you're onto something
that's
down
right.
there.
I'll join in on
that's
that
right.
movement.
Wow. Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's a great movement.
Viewers and then later PodFam, Jen referenced her book, Who Stole My Bible. I dropped a link for that in the description. So if you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can easily click that and take it to Amazon. But yeah, let's dig into that book for just a minute, unless you wanted to follow up one more on that.
No, I'm just shook over here. So
okay. Shake away, my love. Yeah. Who Stole My Bible? Can you, what a great title.
Such a good title.
What is your sort of, what are you trying to accomplish with this with this book?
You know, I was in part trying to make sense of the Trump years for myself. Okay. And I was realizing that as I reclaimed my faith, what gave me courage during those years to stand my ground was scripture. You know, I would be standing in the halls of the Senate outside Mitch McConnell's door, and verses of scripture would be echoing in my brain. And I'd have to kind of go back and pray about it and be like, why is that in my head? You know, why is that in my mind? One time it was just the phrase remember, like how many times in the Bible we're told to remember something. So I looked that up and I realized it's all through the books of the law, Leviticus and the delivery of the Ten Commandments. Every time God explains the law, God says, remember, you were slaves in Egypt. Therefore, here's how you're supposed to treat other people. And so for me, what I realized was remembering and looking at our history is a spiritual discipline, a spiritual practice in this moment where we're having a racial justice uprising. And so many of us have been taught to believe that we had overcome, that we were progressing on race issues, right? And so I'm going back and looking at the community I grew up in, the high school I went to, and I'm realizing, my God, I went to a white Christian Segregation Academy. You know, I'm going back and reading the history of my community and realizing the school my cousin went to, they barred MLK's son from going to that school because they had it in their charter that they were not going to permit Black students. This is in my lifetime, you know?
Yep.
And I went to one of the first desegregated public schools prior to going to this private school. And that was in the 1970s. My mom was supposed to have gone to a desegregated school because Brown versus Board of Education, Supreme Court decision, that happened in the 50s. Yeah. You know, so she was supposed to experience that. It didn't happen for 20 years. You know, so, you know, in some ways, I'm sure African-American, my African-American friends are like, Jen, come on. You know, like, so now I'm going back and like unpacking that with them. What was it like for you to go to that school, you know? And really opening up that conversation. So remembering is very important, and especially remembering from the perspective of people who have been enslaved, the people most marginalized. So if I really want to understand my history, I need to be talking to communities of color and really following their lead. So it was those kinds of things that made me want to write this book. I was like processing so much. And then I was thinking about my own experience and my biggest joys in this work. I mean, one, when we win a policy or protect somebody's right to vote, right? That's big.
Yes.
But the other one is when I see somebody reclaim their faith and feel like they can speak out from a place of moral leadership to what they believe the world should look like. So this is why I dedicated the book. And I cried when I wrote this. So it relates to your tears earlier. And I knew I must have hit the spot. So I said, I dedicate this book to the brave and sometimes lonely Christians finding their way out of the wilderness and into the streets. May you find joy in reclaiming and resisting. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I just retell the Bible story from Genesis to Revelation. And I pull out the lessons that we can take away for entering into the world and trying to live out that faith in the world to make it a more just and compassionate place.
Wow.
I'm very excited to read that.
I'm glad.
Very excited to read that. We've talked about this on the show before, babe, how part of what I think that the progressive Christian group is lacking is a compelling narrative.
Yep.
We've talked about how like the conservative evangelicals, they have a compelling narrative, right? It's there is a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it makes sense to our logical brain. Like it, and it's interesting.
There's
and
all
it's
the things that get us humans
exciting.
On the hook. There's
yes.
a bad guy and there's a savior and there's
a way
an end
to,
place.
Yeah, there's a climax and the denouement, yeah. like all the things you can look forward to. Like there's a sort of this closed, yep. compelling narrative. And then many of us in the progressive movement, and this is maybe more so true, Jen, for those who are not more the evangelical, non-denominational stream than the mainline stream. Those of us who sort of left that, or like, you know, I call it post-evangelical, it's like, okay, so we don't buy into that story anymore. And we've got these kind of ethereal values of what we do believe in. But how does that all fit into a story? Like, what is the thing that we're inviting people to really
How do we be compelling?
Yeah, how do we be compelling? How do we be interesting and compelling and evangelistic with a better story, a better gospel? So
I'm with you on that.
I really want to read your book.
Oh, that's awesome. And you are so right on. I mean, there are a lot of people, that's like the holy grail, like both of organizing and progressive organizing activism and of faith. Like, what is that story? And why are we so bad at telling it, right?
Yes.
And I think one of the reasons we're so bad at telling it, I mean, so I'm a little bit of a crossover. Like, I grew up in the Methodist Church mainline, but it was in the Bible Belt. So a lot of us were evangelical. And it was the 80s. Everybody was getting swept into the Republican Party, you know, and Reagan. And as a young evangelical, so I had a born again experience in high school. So,
so you're
evangelical mainliner. Yeah. So I get it. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
You're so, Oh, yeah. I can tell you some stories. but I was like, you know, really wanting to be like devout and committed to my faith, but like all of the religious people were really rallying behind Ronald Reagan. I was like, I kind of like Jimmy Carter because he's always talking about peace and, you know, all this, you know. So, you know, all that to say that, like, we, you know, we don't have our story down. Also, mainliners, I think, kind of sold out their faith. Like, they felt sort of insecure about who they were in faith, and they didn't claim the Bible. You know, they kind of got caught up in, like, secularization, right? And so when the Christian right then started, like, you know, putting, you know, TV studios in their basements, you know, like Jerry Falwell did, when they started really organizing...
attacked right now, Jen. Feeling a bit attacked. No.
I'm saying that is a good thing. Like, they had studios in their basement, you know, like, and we had nothing. Mainliners were giving up their studios.
Yeah.
There was a point, Jim Forbes at Riverside Church used to say this all the time, that we used to have radio stations and we gave them up, right? So we were like going down, whereas evangelicals were like going up. And evangelicals were also getting a lot of financial support from corporations who wanted to influence politics and deregulate all the money. And they were getting connections to the Republican Party. And so that's what created this phenomenon that you all are talking about. And my people, the mainliners, the frozen chosen, we kind of opted out. Like, we sort of like lost our leadership and abdicated our moral authority. So that's another reason for my wanting people to reclaim, right? Like, so like evangelicals who are coming out, ex-evangelicals are looking for a way, a new faith, a way to talk about things. And mainliners really need to, you know, claim this beautiful theology actually that we had, you know, and blend it all together. You know, so we need to team up basically.
And help and some of us post-evangelicals who don't have a denomination, like, help us.
Find a place to go.
Help us.
Help,
Sojourn Grace Collective in San Diego. We need help.
Well, yeah, and if we could liquidate some of these mainline church buildings that are kind of empty, right? And pour those resources into ministries like yours.
That are thriving,
Thriving and telling good, new generations stories. Of people.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. That would be my dream come true.
We have more kids than we do adults. I'm going to work on that. We just don't have anybody to underwrite the thing, so. If you know anybody who's liquidating out in SoCal, let us know.
I got to get to work on that. Yeah,
just took a fun little
I really
turn.
Do. So, and I'm Jen, serious. I here, do that on the side. You know, it's funny because people always think I'm going to be talking about policy, politics all the time. But I'm always like, and we really need to be supporting these progressive churches and ministries, whatever. And so I've made that pitch many a time.
Here to just like sit with us over coffee. Can we do that? Okay.
Yes.
We'll talk to you later about doing that. Okay, cool. Good. That was an official invite. I really love what Joel just said. I need this book. It's been a struggle for me having learned about the Bible only from a white evangelical perspective. I've learned so much just from this podcast so far. I love that.
Thanks, Joel.
Yeah. That's great.
Thank you, Jen, for being here to help people with that. There's another narrative out there.
Do you have an answer, or is it giveaway? Is it too much of a spoiler if you tell us the answer to the title of your book?
Who stole my Bible? The answer to that question? It
Should
is Christian nationalists.
First? Okay. All
right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I can spoil it. It's Christian nationalism stole our Bible.
Yeah.
And there's a whole history to that. There's another great book I'll recommend. A colleague of mine, Robert P. Jones, wrote a book called White Too Long. And he tells in detail the story of how that happened. White Too Long. It's a fairly new book, past year. And he talks about how the Baptist Church was actually, Southern Baptist Church was born post-Civil War to pull people out of what was called the social gospel, which was very socially engaged, and a lot of evangelicals wrapped up in that, and to privatize and pietize the faith so that it was an individual experience. And so they talked a lot about personal piety. And this whole premillennialism, postmillennialism thing came with that. You were, you know, you weren't trying to improve the world now and bring about the kingdom of God now. You were waiting until things devolved, right? Mm-hmm. I always have to think this through because it sounds so crazy to me, but devolve and then Jesus would return.
Why bother recycling? The worst thing, the world's going to burn anyway. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And the worse it got, the better for it, right? Jesus oh my God, we celebrated really bad.
How awful things were. Yes. So oh yeah, there's a lot of earthquakes.
Was created,
and war, right? It was always earthquakes and war.
Yeah, it was created by a Confederate soldier, that theology. Like, wow. So that came out of the Civil War. They had to justify, because Reconstruction ended, that period where they were trying to redistribute wealth and make sure Black people were enfranchised, right? Had their access to the ballot. Then through some deals and some twists and turns, Reconstruction ended. They pulled federal troops out. A whole season of lynching and terrorism and, you know, preventing Black people from voting, confiscating land, all of that began. And they also had they had a whole project around whitewashing history, you know, and so teaching an alternative history that slavery was good and they treated their slaves right. And there was a parallel project theologically to get people away from the social gospel and from what Jesus actually taught and into a very personal salvation view of faith as opposed to a collective communal, how should we live together view of faith.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I only just learned that, the particular details of that particular bit, the theological piece of how that got constructed. And so that's been brought into all of our white churches in particular to go to Black churches to really learn the faith. They have been the guardians of the true Christian faith.
Yep. Yep. Wow. Yeah. If you teach people that it's just about personal salvation after you die, you'll basically cause a whole movement of like a mass movement of people who don't give a shit about planet Earth. Right? That's what we do. Like, it's all about heaven after you die. And then next thing you know, everyone in our country is going around not giving a crap about anything.
Not really giving a flip about it at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Because why would you? Why would you? There's nothing to compel you to care.
Nothing.
Everybody's fine. We'll all go to heaven when we die. And those who don't, well, you know.
Yeah. Well, Jen, you clearly care and you clearly give flips about the world and the people in it. And
so glad.
I'm incredibly inspired by you and by your work and grateful that you exist in the world. Can you, before we go to our closing lightning round and wrap this thing up, is there a word of what's up?
Sorry, just really quick, have to read Melanie's comment.
What did Melanie say?
I just bought and downloaded the Kindle version. Brian McLaren wrote the foreword. Methinks it's going to be a very, very late night. I'm East Coast too.
Yes. All right.
Oh my goodness. That, Melanie.
That's awesome.
I love it.
So Jen, you have now been in, so you've seen this Christian nationalist emergence and or unveiling, maybe as a different, maybe more accurate way to say it, over the last, you know, four, now going on 5 years. And then you've also been a part of this turn, at least not renominating Trump. So I'm not saying things aren't fixed because Biden's in the White House, but hopefully they're not as going in the bad direction as they were. Can you give a word of hope as we sort of close out? Like, what gives you hope as you look at sort of these trajectories of faith and politics in our country?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of hope because when I started this work, nobody knew what progressive faith was. The first person I met in Washington, I told him what I had come to do. And he said, isn't that an oxymoron, progressive faith?
That's right.
You know, and then the elevator doors shut and I was like, wait, you know, so I think we're making somewhat of a comeback, both through ministries like what you all are doing. And also the news media are covering our activism more and reporting on what we're doing, which I think is evangelization, right? To me, when I get a press hit for getting arrested at the Capitol for civil disobedience on voting rights, I feel like that's evangelism. You know, it's bringing the good news out. And so that's happening. Religious communities are getting more bold and better organized. When I started this work, we were somewhat reticent to speak publicly from a faith perspective. We were doing some of the work, but we just didn't, you know, talk about it as overtly. Is that to call the right to vote sacred and to talk about why it's sacred and about human dignity. So I have a lot of hope around that. I feel like the Spirit of God is on the move and something is being rebirthed. It's going to take time, but I think it's coming. That moment is coming. And that's God exciting. Never lets us go. Yeah.
That's exciting. Thank you for that.
I love a word of hope from the Reverend.
I was hoping you'd have one to share. So I'm really, good. I was bracing myself for you being like, well,
things are looking really bad, right?
No,
I love it so much. Can we do a quick lightning round with you? You up for it?
Yeah, sure. Right. What is a lightning round?
Right?
Is that when you ask me a bunch of questions?
Yep. They're just fun.
Okay. Yeah, you have less than 3 seconds to answer each question.
We're not telling you.
I'm You're kidding. Good. Take as much time
Favorite
as you
Favorite movie of all time?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay,
no
okay.
No way.
Okay, didn't
that makes
that
me really happy.
Do you have thoughts and feels around the other three in the series?
Oh, the very first is absolutely the best. You know, I like the one with his dad, with Sean Connery. And I thought that was really cute and, you know, dad issues. I got a lot of them. So, yeah, I like that one.
Oh, my gosh. I love it.
I grew up, for whatever reason, Temple of Doom was we watched more than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I feel like everybody had one they watched more than the others.
I just can't ever not think
Raiders
about
the
guy grabbing
the heart.
And pulling it out and eating the monkey brains. And anyway, I think I need to rewatch Raiders of the Lost Ark because I just have Temple
That's
of Doom.
That's the one I watched the most.
Which
the
one?
First one is closest. Or, it's closest to the genre of pulp fiction.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah, really well done.
Okay, fill in the blank. Self-care is?
Chocolate.
Oh.
Yes.
Chocolate.
Believe it or not, you're not
Tonight
the first
it was
person
chocolate.
That has shared that.
I
chocolate.
Know, I love that.
Are we talking dark,
actually,
milk, sea salt?
Last episode it was what is sustaining your soul.
Oh, chocolate. Yeah, the chocolate was sustaining the soul.
Chocolate caramel with sea salt, to be
yes,
precise.
Yes, that's the best way to eat chocolate.
So good.
So good. I'm all about that.
I don't know why it took us so long to start adding sea salt to chocolate, but I feel like we figured
know,
that out
why?
About 10 years ago. And they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We should be doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Then put it all in ice cream, too.
Oh, hallelujah.
All right. Something you're deeply grateful for right now.
For good people everywhere who are organizing so creatively.
I love it.
I like this.
Okay. What about a weird fear? Do you have any weird fears?
Yeah, you know, I actually like snakes, frogs, things people hate. But bugs with a lot of legs... Like, you know, like,
Like a
centipede and things like that. Like, I will scream run across the room. And I'm not, like, usually an appropriate number of legs. I don't know what it is about the legs, but, you know, I've been around, you know, all kinds of things. So
that is awesome. I really like that. Okay,
lots of legs.
Who's a famous person you swear you'd be besties with if only you knew each other?
If only we knew each other. Besties with golly, I'm not good on famous people for some reason.
It can be Melissa Gilbert if you want.
I know, I was about to say that. You read my mind. That was so weird. Or, you know, I saw y'all love Elizabeth Gilbert, right?
Yes.
Like the author.
Yes.
And I really want to hang out with her and see how she writes that historical fiction. Like, her historical fiction is out of this world. And the story she pursues,
I
have been Googling her.
Signature of All Things is my favorite book of all time.
I was struck by that because I haven't heard anybody else talk about that book, but I was stunned by that book.
it's done.
And the one that takes place in New York, City of Girls.
Oh my!
Have you read City of Girls?
Yes. I thought you liked City of Girls. Did you like one better?
No,
than
I like
the
Signature
other?
Of All Things better, but okay. City of Girls is phenomenal. Okay. Phenomenal.
The Signature of All Things. I'm like, how did she come up with
how?
That? Is really, yeah.
Kate had me read it, and I was better for it. Just
that was when I couldn't go through alone. I'm like, you have to do this.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the love stories in there.
Oh,
come on now, Alma.
But yeah, I want to know how she does it. How she, you know, I was looking for like a interview with the author that where she talks about her imagination process and her research.
Yeah, she'll just call it magic and then move on to the next question.
I know. And she's hiding her tree. No. Somebody told me that writing is like being a worm in the dirt. That was her process. She just had to kind of like grope your way through. Lily King, another good writer.
I
can relate to that.
I have seen a thing where Elizabeth Gilbert talks a little bit about her note-taking and her process. So I'll find it because I know I've watched it and I'll send it to you later.
Thank you. That would
She's
be good.
She's definitely a mad note-taker and researcher. I know that.
You'd have to be.
Okay. What's a book you believe everyone should read?
All of Brian McLaren's books. A book people should read. I would say this book I mentioned earlier, White Too Long by Robert P. Jones. I like that history. Really
Did
stunning.
You say Robert P. Jones?
Robert P. Jones, okay. Yeah, White Too Long.
Okay, and last question that we ask everybody every week here at the Kate and Colby Show, what's sustaining your soul right now? What's keeping you going in life?
You know, nature. Like, I really am close to God and nature. I always have been ever since I was a little kid and used to run everywhere barefoot through the woods, you know. And so I'm getting back in touch with that, like, inner child. And I'm not going barefoot through the woods, but I am running sometimes in the woods with my dog and, like, just really taking time to meditate and pray and get in touch.
That's
great.
And now that you have that dog, you're really pulled out into the nature. Mm-hmm. You have to go.
I really have to. She yells at me if we don't go. So that's good for me because I've always knew I needed that. You know, like I remember this one time I was living in Manhattan, went out to the woods for a retreat, was like touching a fern in the woods and I just started weeping. You know, it's like there's something of God in there that it just really restores my soul. So I could go on. So
do you ever make it out to the West Coast, the best coast?
Oh yeah. Now, well, with COVID lifting, but I have relatives out there and lots of colleagues. So I would love to come.
We got to make it happen. All right.
Do you, are you a minister to church right now? Are you working at a church?
I am Bethesda Presbyterian Church,
okay.
Near here. Yeah. I'm like a parish associate because the work I do with Faith and Public Life is so all-consuming,
so
but I'm actually preaching this weekend. So.
Oh, cool.
What are you preaching?
Feeding
about?
Of the Multitudes. It's a lectionary text, the feeding and abundance 4, 000, versus scarcity. The 5,000 John, it's the John text. I think it's 5. I'm bad on numbers, but yeah, it's 5. So, I'm talking about, you know, God's vision of abundance versus the empire's vision of scarcity.
Yes. Nice.
And how we can live that out personally. I mean, there's a collective thing to it, but I'm going to talk more about spiritual practices that can get us from scarcity to abundance.
I love it. I love a good spiritual practices offering.
Yeah.
Practical
stuff. Yeah. I'm working on those myself, you know.
Are you all back in
doing
person?
Doing activism. Once every 5 weeks, we're meeting in person. So we're kind of easing into it. To your point earlier about
transitions.
Like easing back into COVID and not doing violence,
that.
You know, to ourselves, the transition. So, yeah. We had a wonderful outdoor worship. Oh, yeah. It was so great. And we're doing
something to think
when
about.
We go back together, we're doing it outdoor, you know, so not in the sanctuary yet. So easing into it.
That's awesome.
We've been strictly virtual since March 14th, whatever that first Sunday was after that March 11th American reckoning. And so August 1st, not this Sunday, but next Sunday is when we're planning to get back together for the first time. So we are.
It's what made me go, oh my God, what are we doing? Have my moment.
We're up to our eyeballs and like, oh geez, how do we do this again?
How do we do this?
So the idea of doing it maybe gradually and not every Sunday.
It's beautiful.
It's interesting.
Yes, yep. It's a good one, right? And schedule some time to rest after your first one back. All of my friends are telling me how exhausted they are at the end.
Yeah.
There's something about the extroverted nature of like being in person that's so wonderful, but it is, we're not used to it anymore. Yeah. Just like like Zoom and being online used to be so exhausting. I used to go lie on my bed after a Zoom meeting, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Now the reverse is true. Now we gotta, as we back it back out.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you so much for, I know you stayed up so
late
for
this,
and I just really appreciate it.
I feel like I got to know you too a little bit, so that's nice.
I know.
Do you go to Wild Goose? Do you go to Wild Goose Festival at all? No?
I've been three times in the past. Once? Kate has not gone yet.
I haven't gone yet.
We were this close to going this year.
I know.
Were you? Okay, okay. Maybe sometime there too, but I'll just come out to California.
Okay.
We got to have you out.
Do that.
It'd be so good.
We can hang out.
Either way, I'm just so excited we got to meet and keep in touch, and we're friends now, so that's that.
Good, good.
So that's that.
Yeah. I'm so glad.
Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Jen.
Really you all take care.
All right.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. If we just do this show for the sake of getting new friends for you and me, that's not a bad reason to do the show.
Forever.
Man.
Oh,
that's the wrong date I put up there.
Oh, whoops. Fix that.
Yeah. That was...
Y'all, we get to have Paula back after royally screwing that up.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe that she's still coming back to the Kate Coley show after? That's a good friend right there.
That was the moment we knew we needed a new computer.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing shut down. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us tonight and hanging out with us and Reverend Jen Butler, who was just a treat.
Phenomenal. Like, I saw all y'all's love for her. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it was even better than I had hoped for.
Yep.
Really important work that she's doing. So please check out her new book, Who Stole My Bible? Again, down in the description below, you should find a link for that. And then coming up next week, we've got Austin Hartke, author of Transform, his work with being a trans Christian activist. Excited to talk to him next week. And then weren't we just talking about the Stephanies?
This guest that we are having coming up.
Oh, yes.
Stephanie
Tate's going to be here in 2 weeks. And then... Thank you
now,
so much,
sweet Paula.
Tori. Thank you so much, Melanie. Thank you so much, Susan.
Love
so
y'all.
Good to have you all with us. That's it for us from the San Diegos. Now I got to find... See, when I had buttons, the buttons are all
awkward
programmed.
Ending.
Now, where is the outro podium? It's right here. Love y'all.
If you enjoy The Kate and Colby Show, here are a few ways that you can support us. Subscribe to our podcast feed on whatever platform you use. And when you do, go ahead and leave us a review or rating. This will help others discover our show. Find and follow us on social media using the handle @KateandColby. And speaking of social media, we'd love it if you share our show with your friends. Everyone is looking for a great podcast recommendation, so help them and us out. Finally, if you visit us at kateandcolby.com, you can subscribe to our newsletter, learn more about us, the hosts, and discover great resources for coming more alive. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded in San Diego and produced by Holy Living Studios. Thank you for your love and support. We do this show for you, our pod fam. Until next time, be well.